Okay, I had a request for this evening's talk. Someone asks for a particular topic for me to speak on, and at first I thought, because it was a sort of topic that you'd think everybody talks about and people talk about all the time, but then later on I thought, every talk is different anyway, and different people talk about the same thing in different ways. And so I thought I'd give my spin on this famous word. You probably all go, no, and I say it. And someone asked me to give a talk on mindfulness.
No.
Boring. It's quite interesting because my reaction, which is probably the one that's similar to some of yours, but why is it? It's because it's one of those overused words, overused in the sense that a lot of people talk about it, but very few people know what they're talking about. And so we get various different ideas and various different attempts to describe what is, perhaps, in fact, if not the most, then at the very least, one of the most crucial aspects of the Buddhist teachings, in the sense that wherever we look in the Buddhist teachings, that word is almost always there. And that's why, of course, a lot of people talk about it. And just to even start this evening's talk about mindfulness, one of the first things that comes to mind is the fact that having lived in the monasteries in Thailand and still listening to the teachings of those great teachers in the original Thai language is one of my little joys. Apart from reading the suttas, I really enjoy listening to Thai teachers talk on the Dhamma. And one of the things that comes to mind straight away is that they very rarely ever use that word just by itself. They always use it as a component word alongside with panya. They use the word satipanya, or sometimes they use the word sati sampajanya, which is exactly the same thing, meaning mindfulness and wisdom. And it's those qualities which are supposed to be guarding and guiding our every action that we perform, be it physical action, be it verbal action, or be it just action in the mind. Mindfulness and wisdom, as the Buddha said in a very famous verse in the Dhammapada, if one has got no mindfulness, one is as good as dead. And for those who have mindfulness, they are in the presence, or they are close to the deathless. And so that's the degree of importance that the Buddha lends to this word mindfulness. And even if you just use, because we're working with translation here, mindfulness is obviously very different from the word sati, or the word satipanya in the original Pali language, because we have to rely on these translations, and sometimes they are, unfortunately, rather inadequate. But if we look at this word mindfulness, because it is the chosen English translation, we can just break it up, mind and full. It means a full mind. And what it means is it means full awareness, full attention, fully present, fully there. or rather fully here. When the mind is full, when the awareness is full, then we are alive. If we are not full, if the mind is not full of attention, if we are not alert, not awake, then we're as good as dead, the Buddha said. Because what happens is if we're lacking that quality of mindfulness, then we're not aware of what is going on. We are acting for our own disadvantage and for the advantage of others if we act without mindfulness. If we're not aware of the present state of our mind, then that is a very dangerous situation, because we can do all sorts of things. We just become the victims of our passions, our desires, our cravings, our aversions, and we become like animals. The degree of mindfulness that animals have is very small, and that's why they haven't got the capacity of choosing between a wholesome and an unwholesome action, for instance. And so that's just to give a little bit of an idea of how important that thing is, that little word is. And there's obviously many degrees of mindfulness, and so we have to really cultivate those degrees and have to be very honest where we are at with ourselves, and we have to know what we can do to cultivate, to improve, to enhance our mindfulness. And one of the interesting things that just comes to mind, if you look in many of those sequences, how you cultivate mindfulness in the Buddhist teachings, you come across the fact that it is almost always preceded by energy. It's like from energy that mindfulness arises. And it's quite interesting, because if you're dull, if you're not energetic, if you don't make an effort, then the mind, as it were, sort of sinks down to the lowest point, like water. The mind will always, you know, flow down to the lowest point. It will always indulge in just habits, you know, and just sort of lull in old habitual patterns. And the idea of rousing mindfulness is through that energy that we're actually going against the grain of, you know, our habitual conditioning, which keeps us trapped and keeps us trapped in a sort of rut. Yeah? Because we're creatures of habit. We create certain habits, and a lot of us unfortunately have created unskillful habits. And so when we then try to break some of those unskillful habits, we need to rouse mindfulness and wisdom. Because mindfulness without wisdom, just knowing something, is not good enough. Because it is the wisdom aspect, it's the wisdom faculty which informs us of whether that which we are currently knowing is actually beneficial or unbeneficial for us. If we know something that is of no use, of no benefit, then we might as well not know it. What's the point? Or if we know something and we know at the same time that it's not beneficial, then we should make the effort to overcome that. If an unwholesome mind state arises, for instance, and we know it, and we know it as unwholesome, then we should do something about it rather than indulge it. And so there's many areas in which we can train that ability to know, to be aware, to be awake, to be present throughout the day. And really it should start whenever we first get up in the morning. It's the state of mind that we wake up with that we have to look at. We have to look at that state of mind and then see, well, is it good? Is it wholesome? Is it happy? Is it peaceful? Is it awake? Is it bright? Or not? But of course, waking up for most of us is not usually a time when we are particularly bright, unfortunately. And so we have to do something. We have to arouse energy. And that is the thing we have to understand, is to how do we arouse energy? And how do we bring up effort? How do we make effort to be alert, to rise up to the occasion, to rise up to a new day? And of course, you can only rouse energy and make effort if you're interested in what you're about to do. If you haven't got any goals, if you haven't got anything to motivate you, just another dull day in samsara, then the motivation isn't there. And so having goals in our lives is yet another possibility or another way of creating the interest and the energy that rouses the mindfulness, that rouses the sharpness of the mind. And when we have a goal, say for every day, for every morning, for every time we get up, for everything we do, if we have a clear goal in mind, and we have the faith that this goal is something worthwhile, then based on that goal, we can make the effort, rouse the energy, and with the energy, immediately, the mindfulness comes up. It's like I know it for myself. I mean, I've got a certain time of the day when, in the evenings, when, I know if I now sit meditation, it's just not going to work. But again and again and again, because it's a habit, I try. And I know every time it's a mistake, and I still keep trying. Sometimes it works, sometimes, most of the time it doesn't work. But I know for a fact that if at that time I actually rouse energy, make effort, and go outside, no matter what the temperature, whether cold or hot, and actually walk meditation, only 15 minutes of walking meditation is enough. 20 minutes, half an hour. If I then go back inside my hut and meditate, I can meditate for another couple hours. Is that there is that turning point in the evening, which is usually around, because I get up very early, sort of 8-9 o'clock. If I go outside to walk for an hour or half an hour, then I can sometimes sit until very late into the night, and the mind is bright, is alert. So what you have to know is how you can go against the grain of laziness, because it's the laziness is the biggest killer of the spiritual path. It's the laziness. We're all lazy. Every single one of us. We're all lazy, and that laziness is a killer. And basically in the Buddhist path, anything goes to overcome laziness. Whatever you can do to overcome that indulgence in unskillful habits, and that lingering in the known, in the comfortable or pseudo comfortable, because it's not really comfortable. Because anybody knows, anybody who has ever had a good meditation, anybody who has ever roused energy and brought up that mindfulness and attained to peaceful states of clarity of mind, and would know how much more superior that is to the ordinary, humdrum, dull kind of state of mind that the ordinary person runs around with all the time. But the thing is, we have to train ourselves in these little things, in these little areas throughout the day where we give 100% to whatever we're doing. Because this mindfulness, this quality of being aware, being alert, and being clear about what is actually going on, what we're doing, is something we have to apply to every single thing we do. Whether we're going to the toilet, whether we're having a shower, whether we're preparing the food, whether we're eating the food, whether we're standing, sitting, walking, lying down, whether we're talking, remaining silent, whatever we do, there has to be that presence of mind that informs us of what is the state of mind, how am I feeling, what is going on, and the wisdom aspect, is it wholesome, is it unwholesome, is it beneficial, is it unbeneficial, is this leading to the goal that I've set, or do I have a goal in the first place? And so there needs to be that constant checking up on the state of our mind throughout the day, from the very first waking up in the morning to the very last breath before we fall into sleep, consciousness. And it's the effort, it's like the mindfulness is determined, or the level of mindfulness is directly related to the amount of effort you make. Yeah. If you're not mindful, you're not making effort. You're not making the effort to go against the grain of laziness, of dullness, of indulging in habit patterns that might not be very skillful. And so, again, how do we? It's so difficult because we're creatures of habits, because things are, we're running on automatic all the time, because it's so deeply ingrained, you know, what we do, and because of a lot of our lives are relatively monotonous, that it's very, very difficult to rouse that mindfulness. And that's why we have to find out the areas where it's most important for us. Each and every one of us has to find out where can I first train? Where is it easy for me to train? And where is it more difficult to train? And so we first of all train ourselves in the easy areas, and then take it into the more difficult areas. So when we first get up in the morning, you know, just make one of the things that really helps for setting up mindfulness is that sincerity and sense of resolve with regard to what we're about to do. Yeah. If we don't make a resolve, if we don't make, say, a determination with sincerity that this is what we're going to do, then we just haven't got a mirror. We haven't got a mirror against which we can actually see the reality. If you don't have a standard, a high standard that you're holding up as your guiding principle, then you won't actually become aware of the actual standard that you currently have. So in other words, on a very simple level, just with regard to your five precepts, which is supposed to be like the basic foundation of a Buddhist. Yeah. The moment you actually determine, make that very firm, sincere resolve, from now on, I'm going to keep those five precepts, from then on, you're going to see where you break them. And you become aware of the difficulties of keeping them, which ones you can keep easily, which ones you have more difficulties with. If you never ever make the resolve, if you never ever determine, if you just sort of say, oh, well, see what happens, she'd be right, then she'll never be right and it will never happen. Because, you know, we just haven't got that mirror. I like that simile or that example of a mirror, because a mirror reflects something. It reflects the present reality against a standard that we're setting. And so those kinds of making a resolve, making a determination with sincerity is very, very helpful, because it trains the mind to become more aware and awake. It trains the mind to wake up, to rise to the occasion. So, for instance, if you want to really see what your state of mind in the morning is like, rather than, you know, just taking it for granted and see what happens. And you make a determination before you go to bed. Tomorrow morning, or say you look at the state of your mind when you go to bed. Yeah, and you say, okay, today I worked so and so much. I did this and this and this. You recapitulate your day, and you assess how much sleep you need. If you're in a very meditative mode, you know, you had a weekend and you've been meditating a lot, you're quite peaceful, you're quite relaxed, then perhaps you need, of course, less sleep. So you might get by with 4 or 5 hours of sleep. If you've been working very hard, and you've been talking a lot, thinking a lot, and it's worn you out, obviously you're going to say, well, okay, I'm going to give myself, you know, 6 hours or 7 or 8. Or 9, or whatever, you know, whatever you are, whatever you do, whatever you think is appropriate. Yeah? But then you make that resolve, okay, 6 hours, 8 hours, whatever it is, after that time, as soon as I hear that sound of the alarm clock, I'm going to get up. Yeah? And because you make that determination, yeah, something is going to tell you when that alarm clock goes off, or you can even tell yourself, I will remember the determination I'm now making as soon as I hear the sound of the alarm clock. You condition yourself. Yeah? You tell yourself, I will hear the sound of the alarm clock, and as soon as I hear the sound of the alarm clock, yeah, I will remember that I made this determination, and then I will act accordingly. Yeah? And then you see what happens. Yeah? And then you see all the, if you never do it, you never see the ingenious excuses the mind can come up with for not getting up. But when you make a determination like that, at the very least you see, you know, what an ingenious trickster that mind is when it comes to indulging in its habits. Yeah? I mean, I guarantee there is 100,000 different excuses for why it's not really necessary to get up. Yeah? And that's the kind of thing I'm sort of, you know, I sort of mean. And you can do that in every area of your life, you know. Wherever you want to gain more clarity, wherever you want to become more aware, wherever you want to investigate, find out and see, you know, how you work, what makes you tick, you know, what makes your life go round, then you just make a clear determination that's what I'm going to do, and that's what I'm going to try. And then setting up the mind like that will give you that mirror against which you can see what's actually going on. And those kinds of things are very, very skillful ways of creating both energy, because it's fun also. You know, you're actually doing something. And as soon as you for the first time, you know, say to this laziness, you know, I won't say what I want to say, but you know what I mean, you know? You don't buy into it. You just tell that laziness to get lost. Yeah? And as soon as you do that once, it's just amazing how much energy that brings into the mind. Yeah? Because you've gone against that grain of laziness. And then the laziness gets afraid, of course. And then it has to come up with an even more ingenious way of, you know, keeping you stuck to your old habits. Yeah? But then, of course, you know, the more wisdom you develop, the more mindfulness you gain, the more wisdom you develop, the more mindfulness and wisdom sort of go hand in hand and actually start teaching and training your mind, the more ingenious you get, and the more fun it becomes to actually work with those defilements in the mind. Greed, hatred, delusion, jealousy, fear, anxiety, worry. You name it, the whole lot. You know, there are a bunch of evil, unwholesome states. Yeah? But still, we're niggered around by them, yeah? 24 hours a day. Yeah? And so it's about time that we sort of rise up to the occasion and stick up and say, no, you know, I'm not gonna follow this anymore. I'm gonna try a different way now. Yeah? And once you start making those kind of determinations, you'd be amazed, you know, what you can do. You can do anything, I guarantee. You can do anything. the power of the mind is just incredible. Yeah? But it's just that laziness, that inability to recognize the kind of rut you're in the first place. And, the kind of, what's the word? Like self-indulgence or complacency. There's probably half a dozen words for what I'm trying to say, but I'm sure every one of you will know what I'm actually talking about. Yeah. And so developing that sense of going against the grain, rousing energy, making effort, is one of the most effective ways, alongside with having a clear goal of what you want to achieve, to rouse that mindfulness. And when the mind has that fullness, that clarity, it's such a beautiful state of mind, because with that mindfulness, comes along with that mindfulness come all these wholesome states of mind. You know, there comes the joy, there comes the happiness, there comes the compassion and the loving kindness and all those wholesome qualities. Yeah, they have a chance to grow and mature in a mind that has developed a certain degree of mindfulness. If you haven't got that degree of mindfulness, those qualities are very difficult to arouse in the first place. And if they're aroused, they usually don't last for very long. Yeah. That's why sometimes people get very good meditations when they do these retreats. Yeah. Because most people are very hard working. Yeah. And because they're hard working, that when they actually put themselves to the live up to the task and actually do the meditation, they really get in there. You usually get good results. Yeah. But then, when the meditation retreat finishes, it all sort of falls apart again. And we can't really sustain it for very long. Yeah. And so that's why it's so important to develop the sense of continuity. And, one of the things that the teachers in the Thai tradition would always talk about is that very, very continuity. Because it is the maintenance of mindfulness, the continuity of knowing the state of your mind, that gives you the wisdom and the understanding and the ability to actually really work with your mind. And because if you just manage to get that mindfulness up for a short time, and then it disappears again, if that continuity isn't there, then the mindfulness can't really mature. Yeah. And so one of the things to consider is how can we maintain that continuity? Yeah. And again, continuity is a thing that can only be maintained with interest. Yeah. If you're interested in what you're doing, if you see the value in it. And that's why it's so important, again, that we constantly maintain that checkup on the progress that we're making, yeah? And praising ourselves for whatever progress we make. Because if we praise ourselves for what I sometimes call like 10% victories, yeah, then we see the benefit of it, and we want to gain more. We want to make more effort. But if we fail to praise ourselves, because we have these grand ideals, say, I know I always remember when I go to Germany, and one of the things I rarely talk about is Buddhism, because it's a waste of time, because most people aren't really interested, and so you just sort of you just smile and do your thing, but you don't try and talk much about meditation or Buddhism, because people aren't interested, But one of the things that I notice when I from time to time do talk about, Buddhism, people have this idea that this all or nothing kind of idea. Well, either I'm going to be a monk or a nun, I'm going to shave my head and I'm going to put on the yellow robes and I'm going to really do it 100%, or I'm just going to remain the most hedonistic, indulgent kind of, playboy or playgirl, under the sun, and that of course is wrong. Yeah. you know, people have this black and white, all or nothing kind of idea. Well, either I be perfectly pure, you know, or I just completely, you know, indulge and give in to you know, whatever goes kind of thing. And that's of course very dangerous, and that comes, you know, it comes from the defilements. And so you have to, you know, learn how to be content and happy with, you know, what I call like these 10% victories, you know, where, you know, you look at yourself and you say, well, this is an area where I want to improve. This is where I want to rouse a bit more effort. This is an area where I have to put the spotlight of mindfulness in order to find out, you know, how I can actually improve and do something about that in a particular area. Yeah. So you know that area, you know, you've got enough wisdom to tell you, well, this is an area where I have to improve. Yeah. And so you use that sincerity and determination that I talked about and say, okay, from now on, I'm going to do this, this, and this, and this, you know, in order to, you know, to have that kind of mirror, to in order to do something. And then from then on, you know, make effort in that particular area. Yeah. And then, even though it's only a small area, when you actually get results, yeah, when you actually get and see the benefit of working in that particular area, then you praise yourself for it. Yeah? And you give yourself a pat on the back and you don't take it for granted. Yeah? And you deliberately look at the degree of happiness and the degree of a joy and peace and that it brings you. You look at the fact that it actually raised your what do you call it, like your quality of life, yeah, to a certain degree, yeah. And it is because you value it, because it has actually done something for it, that you then will have the incentive to make even more effort, yeah. and investigate and rouse even more mindfulness in that particular area of your life. And so it's a very, very gradual path, and that is one thing that you can never stress often enough. You know, the fact that the Buddhist teaching is a very, very gradual path. And so we just have to be very honest and very humble and just look at our lives and see, well, you know, this is where I am. And this is where I want to go. Yeah? And this is where I don't want to go. Yeah? And so we have to make those decisions. Because it's like I said, after the meditation, you know, it's all cause and effect. It's all conditions. Causes and effects. Causes and effects. Causes and effects. That's all there is. Hetu and Paccaya in the Pali. That's all there is. Yeah? You do good, you get good results. You do bad, you get bad results. It's as simple as that. Yeah? But it's the defilements of greed, hatred, delusion, yeah, that make us incapable of seeing how we are creating the causes for our own suffering. Yeah. And it is those defilements of greed, hatred, and delusion which make us incapable of seeing how we can create the causes that lead to our happiness. It is the defilements of greed, hatred, and delusion which have been holding sway over our minds for countless lifetimes. Yeah? And they got a pretty good incentive to remain on that throne of your mind and to remain in charge. Because if you start becoming more mindful and develop more wisdom, sooner or later they're going to be toppled. And sooner or later, you're going to replace ignorance and delusion with wisdom and understanding. You're going to replace greed and lust with wisdom and compassion. You replace those things and you get rid of the darkness and you illuminate the mind. And that's not what they want. But they've been in charge for so long, and so it's not just talking. You know, it's almost like you can almost like see them as little as you can always personify, you know, greed, hatred, and delusion, because they are the tools of Mara, if you like. And it's going against the grain of those very forces and the two main tools in order to work against them are nothing other than mindfulness and wisdom. Yeah. Mindfulness and wisdom, you know, in a later stage along the path become automatic. But that's a long way away still. Yeah. So at this time, you know, we have to make effort in order to bring up mindfulness and wisdom, because mindfulness and wisdom aren't working automatically. Yeah. Because we haven't actually seen the truth yet. Yeah. We haven't actually, you know, attained to stream entry. And if we had, then still mindfulness and wisdom wouldn't be automatic. They're only automatic on the level of anagami. Yeah. It's only someone who's gone past that stage that mindfulness and wisdom become automatic. Yeah. Before that, you know, the forces of greed, hatred, delusion, all those unwholesome states of mind, they will keep dragging us down. So we have to constantly make that effort and go against the grain. Yeah. And it is fun. Yeah. Don't think that it is actually something that is boring or something. What makes you afraid of it, or what makes you perceive it as boring, is nothing other than greed, hatred, and delusion. Yeah. It's the delusion that tries us not to be mindful, because the more mindfulness we have, the more wisdom we have, the more clearer we see where we're going wrong, and the more clearer we see, you know, where we're going off the track. Yeah. But again, that mindfulness, of course, once it's developed and cultivated and made much of in our daily life, has, of course, a very, you know, the most beautiful side effect, if you like, when we actually begin to meditate. Because the more we have given 100% of effort, energy, and mindfulness and wisdom throughout the day, yeah, the more we've actually, you know, made the effort throughout the day, the more we will have that source of energy, that source of power, when we actually sit down to do the formal meditation and put that mindfulness on one object, yeah, which is like the breath or the present moment or your loving kindness or whatever else you do. Yeah. And it is there where this effort really pays off. Yeah. Because if you remember, in the Eightfold Path, it is from that mindfulness that samadhi arises. Yeah. It is from the clarity of mind and the sharpness of mind that is that mindfulness, once it's sustained on one thing. Yeah. If you imagine like the mind gathering in one spot, you know, it's just like this big laser. Like you're gathering all this power of the mind in one single spot. It all comes together in this tiny little spot. Yeah. And you can imagine, just with a bit of imagination and understanding of science, yeah, just what a source of power the mind is once it's focused in one spot. Yeah. And that's why, you know, when we bring it all together in the meditation object, whether it's a mantra, whether it's the repetition of a mantra, whether it's Buddho, Dhammo, Sangho, or Kesa, Loma, Naka, Danta, Tatcha, whatever else, whatever other mantra you might use, for those who do use mantras, or whether it's the breath, or whether it's the perception of loving kindness or compassion, or sympathetic joy, or whether it's the recollection of your generosity, recollection of your virtue, recollection of heavenly beings, all those different skillful means and means of meditation that the Buddha gave, all those different subjects of meditation. Whenever you pick one, yeah, once the mindfulness is there, because it's been developed throughout the day, yeah, through being aware constantly what you're doing, checking up on the state of your mind, yeah, with effort all through the day, once you bring it together in the meditation, it's just so easy to focus the mind, because you've been cultivating a mind that remains in a state of wholesomeness throughout the day. That is perhaps another very, very interesting definition. Because when we say we're supposed to be mindful throughout the day, the mindfulness is that which knows, which tells us what is going on. The wisdom aspect is that which informs us of whether that which is going on is wholesome or unwholesome. And the energy and the effort is that which, if it is wholesome, makes us cultivate it, and if it is unwholesome, makes us stop in our tracks and eradicate that unwholesomeness. And so the effort to keep the mind in a wholesome state throughout the day with whatever you are doing is what really pays off when you start to meditate, because then all the joy and the happiness and the rapture bubbles up inside you, because you've kept the mind in, you've kept your nose clean, basically. You've kept your mind in a clean state throughout the day. You haven't given in to all those petty defilements. And if they did come, at the very least, if you made effort, even though you failed, even though you didn't succeed in overcoming them, but the very fact you've tried, the very fact you've not given in to the defilements, at least you battled with them, that will come to your rescue, and that will come will aid you in the meditation. Because just the thought, just the remembering of the fact that you've made effort to go against the grain of unwholesome states of mind, or speech or action or whatever, that in itself gives you energy and gives you power and brings the mind that oomph that allows you to be peaceful and settle down on a meditation object. Because after all, the samadhi, the peaceful states of mind, they come from happiness. And the happiness comes from a wholesome state of mind. And the wholesome state of mind comes from mindfulness and wisdom that have been developed with effort throughout the day. So giving your best shot at all times with regard to knowing what's happening, and giving your best shot at correcting the state of mind if it is going off in a direction which you know from experience is going to lead to suffering. And that's where you can from time to time skillfully recollect and reflect back on the past, and remind yourself of the suffering that you experienced because you didn't practice the path, because you didn't give it 100%, because you didn't practice mindfulness, because you didn't make effort, because you did allow the mind to indulge in unwholesome states of mind. Bring back the memories of suffering. That in itself is a wholesome way to use your mind, if it is done with wisdom. I'm not saying wallow in past memories of suffering. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying look back and reflect with wisdom at where and when and how you created your own suffering because of your own stupidity, because of your own lack of energy and effort, lack of mindfulness and wisdom. And then bring back those painful memories, and they will be an incentive for you in the future to not go down that same road again. And for a monk, for me, sometimes is very productive. If ever, I haven't had it for a long time now, but I remember that from time to time there used to be, the thought of, of lay life, what it would be like, and then just sort of thinking back, what I've been through, and because the thing is, we always remember the good parts, isn't it? I mean, we as soon as a bad experience passes, Yeah, the mind has this ingenious ability to kind of filter out all the kind of rubbish and all the kind of suffering and pain that we've been through, and it just puts it into this kind of romantic kind of picture and light where, you know, everything is wonderful again, you know. And that's why we go down the same road and make the same mistakes, because we don't actually look, you know, at the truth. Yeah. Memory is actually part of delusion, because if you ask 10 people who've experienced the same thing to describe what they've experienced, they're all going to describe something different. And you can see, because they all have their different perceptions, their own different ways that they want to perceive something. Because we only see, we only perceive, we only remember what we want to remember. If we want to remember happiness, then that's what we remember. But sometimes it's quite skillful to remember that those things actually lead to suffering. Yeah. And then you dig up some of the suffering you had in the past. Yeah. I mean, in the end, we all want happiness, isn't it? Yeah. But it's the happiness of being mindful with wisdom is a completely different kind of happiness than that, you know, of that which is the kind of, you know, just go along with the flow and kind of, you know, just getting by kind of thing. Yeah. Because let's face it, I mean, we live in a country that is pretty cushy, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, we're not living, you know, in a country which is, you know, in a very terrible state. And so there already there is a danger of this sort of complacency and self-indulgence and all that kind of thing, you know. So we got a pretty cushy life, and so sometimes it's actually, you know, it's not a bad idea, you know, to not look at the bright side of life for a change, and remind ourselves that, you know, we don't know how long it's going to last, you know. You know, we don't know. Yeah. I mean, how long are we going to, you know, be fit and healthy and, you know, all this kind of stuff? Yeah. We won't. Yeah, everyone is, no one's going to get out here alive. That's for sure. That's Jim Morrison, that's not myself. You know, we're all going to die. We're all going to get sick and old. So at least let's look after our minds. Like look after that mind and make it full. Make it mindful.
And it's just so much more fun to live with the energy and the mindfulness and the wisdom.
But one aspect that perhaps I haven't actually talked about, which you know, is perhaps, you know, quite important to mention at least, is the aspect of memory, you know, with regard to mindfulness. Because I've probably heard it many times before, but I mention it anyway, because the degree of attention or the degree of mindfulness that you rouse at a particular time determines the ability to remember and recollect that experience later on. Yeah. However mindful you are when, say, for instance, you're listening to this talk, yeah, however mindful you are, that's how much of it you remember. And that's why, for instance, traumatic experiences are things which people will remember. Unfortunately, the traumatic experiences are usually negative ones. But if you can imagine like a traumatic positive experience, which, say, for instance, like in a deep samadhi states are, or you know, other things in life, yeah, they are traumatic, or they are so they become so strong in our minds, in our memory, because there was a certain intensity at that time, and that intensity is nothing other than the intensity of mindfulness. It's the intensity of awareness, the intensity of being right there 100% with every fiber of your existence. Is if you're in a car crash, and you're about to cop it, that is where your mindfulness becomes very, very sharp. But of course, I'm not suggesting to, you know, raise hell as you're driving back home tonight and try it out. But you get the idea, you know. And so it's those experiences where we are most mindful, yeah, that we have the ability to recollect them, remember them, yeah. And so it's the memory aspect that is also very important, because it's the memory aspect of mindfulness which reminds us of what we're supposed to be doing. Say, for instance, if we make a determination, like I said earlier on, make a resolve for what we want to do, the more clearer, the more mindful we are as we are making the resolve, the more effort we put into making that resolve, the more we will remember it. It's the nature of mindfulness and memory to go together. So if something is very important to you, then, you know, traditionally as a monk, or myself at least, in traditional Buddhism, we do things three times, yeah. Or in Germany they say all good things come in three, but even though they're not Buddhists, and Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, but still, you know, we do it three times. But it's also a good way of making sure you remember. If you make a determination, make it three times, you know. Like I said at the beginning of the meditation, this is the meditation time. This is not the time for anything other than pinpoint present moment awareness. For the second time, this is meditation time. This is not the time to mess around. For the third time, this is meditation time. If you do that, then there will be that thing in the mind which we remember when the time comes around. And sometimes you find things they go into a place in your mind where you think you forgot. Yeah? If you're very intensely listening, say, to a Dhamma talk, you may go out there tonight and somebody asks you, well, what did he talk about? And you sort of think, you vaguely remember it was something about mindfulness. Yeah? But that's about it. Yeah? But then, you know, maybe in a week, or in a couple of days' time, you're about to do something, and then some aspect of perhaps what I said tonight comes up, and you remember it, because it's relevant to the particular situation. And so whatever you hear, you know, or whatever Dhamma you hear, whatever Dhamma books you read, and whatever conversations you have with your friends on Dhamma, on your practice, or whatever, you know, all those things, they sink in. But it's the defilement's job of greed, hate, and delusion to make you not remember these things. And it's mindfulness and wisdom's job to make you remember those things. Those two are at war all the time. You're either mindful with wisdom, or you're going to be deluded with stupidity. I mean, it's putting it in an extreme way, but you can see what I'm saying there. The two are battling. Until the state of enlightenment is attained, there is the battle going on in the mind of those forces that try to pull you down, and those forces that try to raise you up, rouse your mindfulness and wisdom and understanding. And so there always is this kind of battle going on. And depending on your character, your temperament, you can use, you know, that kind of imagery to get a clearer picture, clearer idea. So, just to wrap it up tonight, it's the importance of mindfulness and wisdom. Once again, you probably heard it many times, perhaps a few different angles on it tonight. One of the important angle, perhaps the ways and means to mindfulness and wisdom, being the making of effort, because the moment you start making effort, you have the mind becomes sharper. If you start running, you're going to be awake, because otherwise you're going to fall over. And so right there you can see that the making of effort is what brings up mindfulness. And the effort you will only make if you see it is worthwhile. And so you have to have a goal, and you have to have your faith well placed in the Buddhist teachings. And based on that faith, you can rouse the energy, you rouse the mindfulness, you rouse the wisdom, and you will find that those qualities will not only enhance your quality of life, but they will also be a very powerful aid to what I think most of you are coming here for in the first place, which is, of course, your meditation. So that's a little talk tonight on mindfulness. So if anybody has any questions, please, afterwards. Okay? Any questions? Comments? Complaints? Difference between letting go and laziness. If you really let go, you're not being lazy. Because if you're lazy, you're holding on to something. If you're lazy, you're holding on to a wrong view. To the wrong view that whatever you're doing, that kind of laziness is going to be a source of your happiness. And there's a very subtle holding on. There's a very subtle attachment to an indulgent habit. There's a subtle wrong view working in the background, which is active, which persuades you that what you're doing is going to lead to your happiness. That laziness, that wallowing in a sort of habit, laziness, is actually going to be happiness. And that is actually not letting go. That's actually like a subtle holding on to a wrong view, that gives rise to a wrong perception. The perception that kind of mind state is somehow going to be leading to happiness. And so your thoughts will reinforce that wrong perception and keep up that wrong view. And so there's that sort of vicious cycle of wrong view, wrong perception, wrong thought, thoughts reinforcing your views, views creating your perceptions, perceptions creating your thoughts, thoughts reinforcing your views. That is going on there on a very subtle level, when you're lazy. Because true letting go, true letting go is where You actually arrive at a state of mind that is open. That is open, that it hasn't got any vested interest in what it actually experiences. It just opens up. It lets go. It has the boldness, the courage to face the unknown. When you let go of something, you just don't know what happens. But you can only do that when the mind has a certain amount of strength. Usually people aren't willing to let go because they know when they're holding on to this, even though it may be painful what I'm holding on to, at least it's familiar. At least I know where I'm at. If I let go, there comes the unknown and perhaps I don't know what's going to happen. So laziness is actually sort of a holding on as opposed to letting go. I don't know whether that comes across in that way. Does that make sense? Good. Any other questions? Yes? Sorry? Yes? A negative trauma can what? A negative trauma can mask a positive one. Is that the question? I'm not sure whether I'm getting what you're trying to say, but what comes to mind that when I hear that is the fact that a so-called negative trauma, once it is used with mindfulness and wisdom, can actually lead to unmasking something which is going to be positive. Yeah? Because usually with these kinds of trauma, is like we actually haven't brought them up into consciousness and understood them with wisdom. Yeah? We haven't actually, it's like an unresolved thing, yeah? Which if we had the ability to you know, bring it up into consciousness with mindfulness and wisdom and look at it and then allow it to cease, to go, yeah, in other words, let it go, yeah, then it can actually lead to, you know, something positive coming out of that. I'm not sure whether that is what you're asking, but that's just... Right. Well, the main reason I use that simile is because of the degree of intensity that is involved with any kind of trauma. People, when they hear the word trauma, it's clear that it's something very intense. Yeah? And I just wanted to use that in order to bring up, because everybody knows what the negative trauma is supposed to be. Yeah? But very few people have had powerful positive experiences, and say deep meditation. Anybody who ever gets into a jhana, they never forget it for the rest of their life. Yeah? For many lifetimes, they won't forget that. Yeah? It's just so powerful. You know, any state of samadhi, even the upachara samadhi, yeah, is very, very powerful states of mind. Yeah? And they are, like, positive. You know, very, very positive. Any other questions? Yes? Eddie? Yes. Precisely. What you're doing, it's the job of mindfulness and wisdom. The question was whether the wrong view, which is usually holding us down or dragging us down, you know, whether mindfulness and wisdom have the ability to little by little cut off that wrong view and lead to right view. And precisely that's what their job is. Yeah? Because the more mindful you are of your wrong view, and the negativity, the suffering it creates, the more you will be, you know, chopping away at it little by little. And that's why the greed, hatred and delusion's job is to not make you see that. Because if you not see it, you won't be able to do something about it. Whereas if you do see it, you will start doing something about it. And so mindfulness and wisdom are there to uncover your wrong view. They're there to uncover the areas where your views, your perceptions, your thoughts are not in line with the truth, yeah? And then correct them and thereby create little by little right view and right understanding, yeah? And that right view and right understanding then little by little leads to freedom. Yeah. Does that make sense, Eddie? Yeah? Good. Okay. Good enough? Another one? Any announcements? There you go.